हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adhikarna 1 Descriptions of the Form of Bhagavan. Okay. Page 53. Moreover, we ask, is Brahman the form of bliss? Okay, this is still, we're still in the Uttara. If it is, it means that its definition is the counter-correlation of suffering. If it is not the form of bliss, it cannot be the Purushartha. Right? Because people are going for something, right? So if it's not removing pain, then it's not going to be something that people are going to be striving for. Right? There always has to be a gain. Purushartha means there's a gain. Right? So either they're getting dharma, so they're getting the piety, they're getting economic development, they're getting sense gratification, or they're getting freedom from suffering. These are the four Purusharthas. Therefore, it must be the form of bliss, but not the form of bliss known in the world. That is our conclusion. Satyam Jnanam Anantam, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.1, indicates that Brahman has distinct qualities. Those qualities exclude the restrictions produced by impermanence and matter. Right? So, the qualities that are there, they're not under the material modes where you have the restrictions that everything is temporary, everything has misery, and all these different things. So it's something that's beyond the material world. Right? Because if you're going to establish that there's qualities, you have to establish that they're not from here. Because that'll be the Mayavadi's problem, right? One may argue that the sarup of an object being white is merely negation of blackness and nothing else. Even then, one should consider that the object is qualified by negation. But that quality is qualification is shakti. Otherwise, if you're saying that, okay, even if you're looking at it from negation, right, that it's just nothing's there, still the negation has to, there's a potency in negation, because if you want to remove it, there's darkness. So if they're taking it, light is simply the getting rid of darkness. But there has to be a potency to get rid of darkness. Otherwise, why would it go? Also, you notice that they do it opposite. We say there's light, and then if you don't have light, then you have darkness. They say there's darkness, and if you don't have darkness, then there's light.
More effective, like Prabhupada says in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, that gives impetus to material activity. That puts the material activity into more real, in one sense, than the spiritual.
Yes, yes. Yes, yeah, yes, yeah. One cannot escape this conclusion, right? Because there has to be a potency to be able to do that. Quote, one arrives at the toll gate in the morning after trying to avoid it at night. End quote. The ghat is the place to cross the river. The king empowers his servants to levy a tax at this place. But the merchant sneaks around on a path at night, fearing getting caught for avoiding the tax. But by mistake, he ends up at the ghat in the morning. Ramanuja. So they're trying to take, oh no, there's nothing in all that. But the point is if it's nothing, how does it remove? How does you get from something to nothing unless there's a potency? So, like they saying like that, the merchant ends up at the toll gate in the morning. Ramanujacharya says, the perception experience, which is with qualities, becomes experienced as having no qualities, nirvisarsh, by some error. You're still experiencing it. That means there must be potency. Because they'll say, no, you realize it. So it's an experience. So where's the potency for this experience come from? This is the cause of observing it, right? Because you're experiencing it. Other qualities are negated by the object endowed with particular qualities. Never is there an object without any qualities. It is said elsewhere, Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.1. Okay, so that all goes together, because I was thinking there was a Satyam in there. Because here we have Satyam Jnanam Anantam before he did Jnanam Anantam Brahma, and then now we get all four. Okay. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.1. By taking the direct meaning of the adjectives in opposition to Brahman, one can conclude that Brahman is without qualities.
One cannot conclude
that Brahman is without qualities. Opposition is the function of creating one meaning by using particular words for various reasons. One must accept the different reasons for choosing certain words to create one meaning, right? You can't just take it that it doesn't matter what words are used. Someone's used particular words for a particular reason, right? How the grammar is, how they're put together. There's a reason for doing that. So you can't just use word juggling and just say, no, you can do whatever you like. Because that's not actually how it's working. Yeah.
It's interesting, like, currently, when one is said that he's learning Sanskrit, it's what the classical Sanskrit they learn, where it's a little bit of how to speak in Sanskrit, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they categorize the Vyaskarana and other aspects of Sanskrit into a Veda course. So that doesn't come under Sanskrit course. It's in like Vyaskarana and others come under the subject studied under Veda.
Okay.
So for people learning Sanskrit, generally for people now learning Sanskrit doesn't include all these functions. Why are you using and everything?
Okay. It's just how to put it together like in a talk as you were speaking. They teach it as a colloquial language. So. One must accept the different reasons for choosing certain words to create one meaning. Through the qualities with their direct meaning, such as satyam and jnanam, or through negation of contrary qualities. Here are the particulars. According to some, there should be direct meaning in the words. According to others, the words should be interpreted according to lakshana. The very nature of Brahman cannot be defined as simply the opposite of ignorance. One may claim that the sarup is indicated by one word alone, since use of other words is useless. Opposition. That's different than opposition. So what
opposition is a grammatical term that describes the use of such things as adjectives to bring out the qualities of a subject or object.
Okay.
Definition's up there, actually. The function of creating one meaning by using particular words for various reasons.
The third line from the top.
Okay. I mean, it just means why you'll use a particular word to define the meaning.
It's a grammatical term.
Yeah, it's a grammatical term. Apposition. What's the app short for? Just wondering.
It's probably something to do with ab, which means to take away.
Okay.
And its position, although referring to another word, is removed from that word.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's part of the word, but it's still removed from the word.
Yeah, it's the same subject as that word.
Okay.
But it's bringing out a meaning of that word in a different place.
In a different place. Okay.
What would be the example?
Means here they're using examples of Brahma as the subject. So Satyam Anantam, Satyam Jnanam and Anantam. These are then words that are defining Brahman.
What's the difference?
between this and adjectives?
It's the same. It says, what's the difference between this, that, and adjectives?
Adjectives are one form of apposition, but can be done in other ways also.
Like adverbs, singles.
It just means it's just the aspect of that there are words giving particular definition to other words. Like you say, you know, house, that big house, very big house, really, really very big house. So, you know, just you're just adding on to increase that. So he's saying is even though it's in it, it's not in the same word. It's not declined together. It still is attached to that particular word. So it's a category of words rather than specific, like an adjective is a specific kind. So a group of words.
Grammatical usage.
Yeah, it's a grammatical usage of those. Then that's called apposition.
So here we're trying to
prove. The car is red. Red is in apposition to a car. It's describing.
But here we're trying to prove that Brahman has all those qualities.
Yes. Because they're trying to say is that no, you don't do it in direct. You have to do it in indirect, in lakshana. Because their idea is that if you're doing it in lakshana, it's not indirect. Therefore, you're not attributing any qualities to Brahman. Even though they're still talking about the same words and the same things. But just because you do it another way, then somehow or another it's different. Right? So it's just that it's a trick by Shankaracharya that if you say direct, you know, if you do it direct, no, then that, because Brahman is beyond and all that, so if we do indirect, then you can describe it. And then people go, oh yeah, okay. That's deep, right? But in actuality, it's the same thing. You're just, whether you're doing it directly or poetically, you're still describing the same thing. Is that, yeah. One may claim that the sroop, okay, one may claim that the sroop is indicated by one word alone, since use of other words is useless, right? You just say Brahman and that's enough, and anything else then is going to be useless. In that case, opposition or case identity cannot take place, since one object cannot be the shelter of words with specific meaning not related to the object, right? So by grammatical meanings, like for like here, when we write it here in English, that there is no grammar there, right? Does that make sense? It means you have satyam, jnanam, anantam, brahma. For us, it's four words in English, right? But in Sanskrit, the how they're put together, the grammatical application on them, then it is connected with Brahma. It has this, it has that, yes.
Like whatever the main, like Brahma, whatever what is called vibhakti it is in, all the adjectives and adverbs should follow. Like we are using satyam, jnanam, anantam.
Yes.
They are all following this.
Yes. So then you know they're connected with that word because they have the same grammatical ending. So what the Acharya is saying is that if you're saying no, only that one word, Brahman, then that alone is indicating the surup. And the other ones, that's useless to put them on. Then why would there be grammar that connects like that? The grammar is there simply for the purpose that satyam, jnanam, and anantam are describing Brahman. They're describing qualities of Brahman. Right, there's spiritual qualities because they define it that qualities means material. But there's also the aspect, no, it doesn't have to be material, it can be spiritual. Is that, yeah. Oh, good. In opposition, one entity is modified by many adjectives. Bina pravritti nivitanam shabdanam ekasmin arte priti samana dikaranyam. Case identity is the function of words with different meanings to indicate one object. Because right? Whatever case it's in, like I think it has seven cases that you can put a word into, and so then the words have to match. If one word is giving support, how you say, giving some a further definition, to the main word, because the one word will be the subject, and then the other words will be then adding to that. You know, so depending on where it is, you can add them to the noun, add them to the verbs, add them to the subject, add them to the object. So depending upon how it is, so in Sanskrit it's very exact like that. So then just by the endings you can tell what the words are. So it's not as much important the order of the words. The endings are then show what's there. Right? Is that what you mean? No, it's the same with languages that have grammar. Right. That's why we were showing it to English. English doesn't have grammar. Right? It's a spoken language. You have a bunch of wild Germanic people running around in England. And somehow or another it developed, because it's mostly Dutch. You know, it's a form of that, because half of the country was taken over by them. Then they brought in the Angles and Saxons, who are other Germans. And then they got in there to try to stop it, and with time then it all just becomes amalgamated. Like that. Then you throw in some French, you throw in this, you throw in that. You know? And then you have, ta-da, you have English. So, now, Latin has grammar. So then you take Latin grammar and you take that and what do you call it? The Aropia aspect?
Imposition.
You impose it on English. Because it's a language, it is spoken, and it has meaning, so it can fit in. Though it doesn't fit in as well as others, necessarily. But you can do that. But it's not that that's how it was developed. It wasn't that you had grammar, and because of that, this is how people spoke. You had how people spoke, and then they rewrite the grammar books to keep up. Does that make sense? Well, the Sanskrit, the dictionaries that are there, it's the same dictionaries today. The ones written thousands of years ago, you know, by Yaska and others, like Amar Kosh and these others, they still work today. All the grammar, Panini, that's, you know, thousands of years ago. That still works. Narayan's grammar, that's from the beginning creation. It still works. So you can exactly speak those things like that. But the others, as it starts to change how people use it, they start to adjust the grammar. Rather so, no, the grammar's like this. Right? Now you have the thing is, whatever the grammar is today, someone who's educated in that will try to help people who are not educated so well in it, that no, this is the grammar. But if you go by what it was before, it's like Old English, that was closer to Sanskrit than modern English. Because Old English, you had only a few, you know, not so many words, you know, a few thousand words. But then by grammar, you created the vocabulary. Well, today, that if you take the grammar and take a word and take a root word and make it into a word, but it's not what's generally contemporarily used, people will say that's not a word in English. But factually it is. So it's a...
The difference is scientific languages such as Sanskrit, the texts of grammar and dictionaries and so on are prescriptive. Mm-hmm. They say this is what the language is.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the texts of a language, dictionaries and grammar texts of a language such as English are descriptive.
Yeah.
This is how the language is used.
Yes.
To define what it is and has to
yes.
be.
Yes.
Sanskrit texts do.
Yes. So it's just the opposite. Like the dictionaries, Sanskrit dictionaries define what the word is, while English dictionaries define how the word is used.
Like that.
Yeah, they're going that way, you know, naturally. So, depending on where you're from, you say, of course, they're following the leader, right? You know, so. You know, and in that, they're all following American English, actually. So so basically, what he's pointing out here is that the words, because of the grammatical case identities that they have, then they have particular specific meanings. So to suddenly now use lakshana and then take it out of the context and change it and do all that, and somehow or another, because you're doing that, it makes it spiritual. You know, it's just like I'm talking like this, and so is philosophy. But if I talk like this, and then, you know, how we're going to use the words and create the relationships and the interactions, and now suddenly now it's going to be New Age. You know, it takes on that quasi-spiritual. So that's all the mind bodies are doing. They're changing from direct meaning into indirect, and then now saying, see, now it's spiritual. Does that make sense?
So according to them, if they keep on using this lakshana every time, that means in their dictionary they have only one word, that is Brahman.
That's Brahman, yes. So ultimately that's all there is.
Mm.
And even when you get to the top level, even that word will disappear.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Well, it seems in this argument by my writers, that you can see the remnants of the Buddhists' rejection of the Vedas.
Yes.
Because they're saying here that, you know, use of these other words to describe Brahman is useless.
Yes.
But the Vedas are giving these words.
Yes.
So subtly they're
Yes, yes. I mean, if you're taking Buddhists and bringing them in, then you're establishing on there, but you're still leaving that Buddhistic aspect, is that it's still up to you as the individual. Because there, it's that if the tree falls, if no one's there to hear it, then it doesn't make sound.
Relative.
Yes, all relative. So again, it's just like, you know, what the Ionians did in the Western philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more relatable. The more materialistic you are, the more that relativity is more relatable. Okay, yes.
The grand spiritual master of Shankaracharya was famous as a Buddhist, but he is the one who started speaking about Brahman and other things.
Oh, okay.
Shankaracharya actually established and like gave a standing to it on its own.
Okay.
That's why we see all in the philosophical points, explanations everywhere, we see the remnant which is actually...
It's coming from that. Yeah, because if you're going to have a pastime, it can't just come out of nowhere. You know, because there's going to be that line. So then naturally there's something like you have Ramanujacharya, so then you have his gurus and everything like that. Whatever it is you're going to have. You know, Krishna's there and he has his gurus. There's always something like that. So then it's natural. Yeah, okay, so he's a big Buddhist.
Famous among Buddhists. He's famous as a scholar, but he's not identified as with the Buddhist sect, but Buddhists accept him also.
Oh, okay, okay. Because he speaks in language they can understand. Okay. Okay. Therefore, something should be explained concerning this. The two words, knowledge and bliss, which are perceived as different, do not make Brahman two different entities. One entity is defined as different by manifesting particulars of its sarup. One particular is knowledge and another is bliss. Right? So how do you identify this? Like here, we have these two flowers here. Right? So one, how do we identify that they're different from the table? Right? That they're in the category of flowers rather than the category of furniture. Right? So there's a difference. And then even within the flowers, then you can see there's a difference in the color, how the petal shape, or everything's like that. That's how you tell. So in any object, it has particulars that define its sarup. So if you're saying Brahman has a sarup, right, then there must be particulars that define it. To just say it's nothing and that defines it, you know, that's not enough, because all you've done is removed of the material concepts that we put onto it. So then where is that Shakti coming from? It's coming from us. So then from us, removing all the material, we end up with Brahman. So then that makes us the source of Brahman, because it's our Shakti that's producing it by our discussion. So if Brahman is its own entity, that means it has to have qualities. Right? And so these qualities here are Jnanam and Antam that he's talking about. Does that make sense?
I mean, it's highly logical. You know, if undifferentiated Brahman has a swarup, and then what is it? It's Bhagavan, but somehow they don't want to accept it.
Yes.
So,
but even the swarup of just the impersonal Brahman, it's still a swarup that's dependent upon the personal Brahman.
Yeah.
But the point is it's still a swarup. It has that form of unlimited and decent, has qualities. But the point is Krishna's qualities are personal. Right? But the point is he expands everywhere, in everything. You know, is everything. So, therefore, he also has the aspect of the impersonal. Because for, let's say, the quality of strength to be there in that wall and in the pillars, you have to have a generic quality that can be manifest in these two different ways. So that quality, that generic quality, that's Brahman. The specific quality, that's Bhagavan. Right? So the specific gives rise to the general, not the other way around. Otherwise, how would you get from this and get down to the specific? Because that's one way to apply. So then there would be so many. Why would Bhagavan only be one? So it has to be this one Bhagavan. And then by his qualities, then what he's manifesting, that has the basis of all the qualities. And then you have the unlimited manifestation in the other way. So it has to start from Bhagavan, not from Brahman. Because you know, they're taking Brahman and then accepting the aspect of Bhagavan, but as Ishwara, so it's something less. But as you said, it doesn't make sense. But because of their attachment, it does to them. You know, it's just like anybody who's attached. They're saying, "Oh, we have to do this," and you're looking at it. It's very obvious. It makes no sense. But they're convinced, and they'll give you arguments that make no sense either. Because of attachment, they want to think. So they're attached to the idea that I'm suffering in the material world, and that's coming because of the names, forms, activities, results, experiences. And so therefore, if I get rid of all of that, I will be happy. So they simply want to be happy. That's the point that the Acharya made first, was that if there's not Ananda, right, then why would there be an interest in Brahman? Why would it be a Purusharta? Because if you're not going to gain something by that, you're not going to go for it. Right? And that also points out for us that the personal aspect, but they leave that aside. You know, why would that be true? So then because that is there, then there must be some qualities and everything that are there in that Brahman. So then you start the whole conversation. But they're trying to do it the other way, negate everything, and then end up with nothingness. But that's how liberation works. That's why only on that platform it doesn't go very far. And it will stay within the material. Lord Chaitanya was describing to Sanatana Goswami in the TLC that when you have, he's talking about the Atmarama verse. And so the Atmaramas, that they are absorbed, but you have those who are neophytes in the Brahman, you know, in Brahman realization. Those who are consistent in Brahman, and then those who are actually liberated. Right? So now, for those who are practicing the Brahman process, you know, with the knowledge and renunciation and all that, but they are not practicing devotional service, they will not be liberated. So when we talk about these great sages who are always fixed in Brahman, they're actually on the second level. Liberated means there must be devotion. Right? So then they're liberated. So that's the person in Shantaras. They have that devotion and they're on the liberated platform. And they appreciate the Lord in how, you know, in his, how he is everything and that he's a person. All these things are there. It's all Brahman. You don't distinguish as much. You don't need to. And so you see how that person is everywhere and everything. And so you can always see Krishna. So depending on what they are, they'll be a little bit more towards the Gyan Paramatma or Bhagavan aspect. So and Braj, it's all about the Bhagavan aspect within that, the Shanta. Does that make sense? You know? So everything reminds them of the person. Right? It means Braja Krishna. Others, it'll remind them of God and his greatness in that. Because it's natural. He's great. He pervades everything. So that matches very nicely. But for them, it's that everything just reminds them of the person. So it's you could say it's a feature, you know, it's a feature of the spiritual world. Like that. So, yes.
What is the difference between Bhagavan and Ishwar?
Bhagavan and Ishwar. So, Bhagavan will be our definition, right? So you're talking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, right? In his medium-sized form, is that what you use? you know, in Braj.
Madhyam
Makara. Madhyam Makara.
Madhyam Makara.
Oh, Akara. Madhyam Makara.
Madhyam Makara. That is Sanskrit of medium size.
Medium size. Madhyam
Makara. Actually, the two words, Madhyam and Akar, when there is a sun, then they become Madhyam Akara.
So but I'm saying there's two M's or one M?
Two M's.
The breakdown is Madhyam Ma.
Yeah.
No, Madhyam.
Sure?
Yeah.
Madhya.
Madhya. Madhya means medium or in the middle.
Okay.
And then Makara. Makara is form.
So my point is you get a half of half a syllable longer when they go together. But Madhyam Makara or Madhyam Makara.
There is a dash in between. Madhya, and there is a dash, and then Makara. That's how
the one
M. Okay, so there's one M. Mm.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get at.
When they speak, it sounds different.
Hmm?
When they speak and when we speak, it sounds different.
If you have to write it down.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what we're talking here. The impersonalist, and then Ishwara means it's Krishna's, it's the Paramatma feature where he is controlling everything in that you're going to have in the material world. Because in the spiritual world, you don't have to bring that out, even though he's taking that principle of God. It's just, there's no creation, maintenance, and destruction. So you don't have to have that Ishwara aspect as prominent there. So that'll be a feature within the material world, right? Then, but we still say it's still spiritual, right? Then you have the, how do you say? What's the next thing? Then you have the impersonalists, because they say there's nothing beyond the material world. It's just that Brahman emptiness. So therefore, if you have a form of Brahman, then they say it's Ishwara, but it's within the material. So it's controlled by the modes. But they, you know, at least give a little bit of credit that the Lord is manifesting in goodness. They don't understand pure goodness. They just think it's goodness. So if we're talking about Mayavadis, then we say Ishwara. I'm discussing, that's generally from their angle how they're looking at it. You know, if we're discussing our philosophy, and we say Ishwara, we simply mean that how Krishna is the controller of everything.
Mm-hmm. You know? In Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Ishwara is controller only, but we also know that he is a well-wisher and he
yes.
is a...
Yeah. So we're talking about the Supreme Lord there, but it may be, depending on the context, he may be talking about his parma, how he's sitting in the heart and everything and controlling. Or it may be talking about, you know, his past. The point is it's the same person. It's just which aspect you're bringing out.
In Sanskrit, Bhagavan more broad...
It depends how you're using broad. Bhagavan is very specific. It means the person. As you go down Brahman, that's very broad. Paramatma, that's quite broad. And then, because your name, form, qualities, and pastimes, there, the personal aspect, that'll be Bhagavan. But if you look at the other way, as the source, then Bhagavan is the most broad, because it includes Paramatma and Brahman. Just depending upon how you're... Is that what you're...
I mean that Ishwara includes control.
Yes.
And Bhagavan includes control, endure, and controller, endure, and will.
Yes, but that also can be there. But he is also is beyond that. You know, I'm saying more. So you could say Ishwara will be more limited in the definition, while Bhagavan will be broader in the definition. Like that. Because Bhagavan means he has the six opulences, that he's controlling them, then that's that one feature. Because naturally, to have them, you have to be in control of them. You know, so it's like if I come up and hand you a basket of samosas and put it on the table, but you can't control that basket, you can't say you have those samosas. Especially when others come in and start to walk off with the individual samosas. Right. Does that make sense?
At a side point, we don't use the word Ishwar, that the Shaivites use. We use Parameshwar.
Parameshwar. Oh, okay.
Beyond.
Okay, so we generally always use Parameshwar. Just like Brahman, we're discussing the generic, and then Parabrahman is the person. Like that. Because the Parabrahman, it has the feature of Brahman. Because everything's Brahman. But the point is the source of Brahman is Parabrahman. Because that's the thing. For them, except for Brahman, nothing's Brahman. For us, everything's Brahman. And then there's Parabrahman. So they're looking at everything's mundane illusion, and then there's Brahman. We're looking at actually everything is spiritual, and then there's the origin of that spiritual. So the only thing that's mundane is actually our view, our consciousness. Because even material energy is still spiritual. But its nature being is such that it's unconscious, we as jivas can't relate to it. So for us, it's inferior Brahman in that it's unconscious. Well, jivas are superior Brahman because they are conscious. But then you have the internal potency, which is superior to us because it's both unlimited and conscious. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. The two words knowledge and bliss, which are perceived as different, do not make Brahman two different entities. One entity is defined as different by manifesting particulars of its sarup. One particular is knowledge and another is bliss. Similarly, one says, this is a mass of whiteness of moonlight. Or one says, this is light. Right? Because that's the thing. This is a mass of whiteness of moonlight. Or you can just say, this is light. Right? So when you say Brahman, it means it has all these other aspects. But you can also explain them and it's not wrong. But complete difference is not produced by existence or bliss, since these are Brahman's qualities. When there is intense moonlight, one says the moonlight is bright. Similarly, knowledge of Brahman with qualities is taught to remove ignorance. I know that great shining person superior to darkness. Knowing him, one attains immortality. Immortality, I was going to say. Yeah, that's a problem.
Maybe
Brajpasa.
Maybe Brajpasa.
Yeah. I know that great shining person superior to darkness. Knowing him, one attains immortality. There is no other path for going there. Svetasvatara Upanishad 3.8. All the devatas were born from the Shining Lord. No one controls the Lord, whose name is most famous. Those who know him attain immortality. Mahanarayana Upanishad 1.8. Thus, Brahma Sutras explain that though one Brahman is a manifestation of bliss, it appears with difference. With the statement, Anandamayo Bhyasata, Brahma Sutra 1.1.12. Interesting. And the other one is 2.1.1 from Taittu Upanishad. Anamayam, Pranamayam, Manomayam, Vijnanamayam are described in succession as forms with head and arms, etc. After Vijnanamayam, another entity is described as Anandamayam. Tasya Prityam Eva Shiro Modo Dakshina Paksha. Modo Dakshina Paksha. Ananda Pramoda Uttara Paksha Atma Brahma Pucham Pratishta. The head is Priya, the right arm is Moda, the left arm is Pramoda, the lower portion is Brahman, the basis. Ananda is the Atma. There is no doubt in this. Is Brahman called Anandamaya? So now he's showing so many different verses and things that are showing that Brahman has qualities. Right? But that doesn't mean the qualities have to be material. They're beyond. So many sense.
Alright. So now the discussion starts on the topic of Ananda.
Okay.
Because in this verse is like one of the main things it's here. That Brahman is called the basis, but Ananda is called the Atma. So now the discussion is basis is more important, or what is beyond is more important.
Okay, yes. Okay, because before we were discussing more on Satyam and Jnanam. And so now we're discussing Ananda. There is a doubt in this. Is Brahman called Anandamaya? Or is it something other than Brahman, like the Anamaya Purusha? One may argue, Brahman is the tail or lower portion, the basis. This statement refers to Brahman, designated as the lower portion. The word Pucham is combined with the word Brahman. However, the word Brahman is indicated to be the Anamaya Purusha, according to Anandamaya Vyasat. Anandamaya Purusham, according to Anandamaya Vyasat. Brahma Sutra 1.1.12. Since Anandamaya is the subject, it indicates Brahman, which is the subject of the sutra. Right, because the case endings between Brahman and Anandamaya are the same. And so if Anandamaya is the subject, that means the Brahman is connected to that. Right, so then that means Anandamaya is the main aspect that's being brought out. Similar to this, it is said, Akashas Talingat. The word Akasha refers to Brahman because Brahman's qualities are mentioned in the verse. Brahma Sutra 1.1.22. The meaning is this. In proximity to the description of the Anandamaya Purusha, there is the following statement about Brahman. So kamayata bahushyam prajayaya. The Lord desired, let me produce progeny. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.6.2. In Chaturveda Shiksha, it is said, Sa Shira, Sa Dakshina Paksha, Sa Ra Paksha, Sa Atma Sapucha. The Lord is the head, the left and the right arms. He is the Atma and the bottom portion. Because of such repetition, Anandamaya refers to Atma, the Parabrahman. In the same section is also said, Asan Eva Sa Bhavati. He, the jiva, becomes not existent if he thinks Brahman does not exist. Because Brahman is the basis, then if Brahman is not there, then where's the jiva? Right. So they both have to be there. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.6.1. This statement is artavat, or praise of Brahman. It is not the repetition mentioned in the sutra, indicating that the Anandamaya Purush would be the jiva. Since that is stated in the verse as shloka, tad ap yesha shloko bhavati, and the context indicates praise. So, because you're saying something, it's just like the Rupa Goswami is giving that point that if you at all appreciate your material, you know, life and absorption and all that, then don't go down to the Jamuna and on the bank of the Jamuna see Krishna in his threefold bending form, because just by seeing his form, it'll attract the mind and you'll be interested in transcendental reality. Right? So that's not pointing out faults, or, you know, it's not a negative. It's just a poetic way of explaining about Krishna's glories. Right? So makes sense. So in this case, it's pointing out his praise. Yes. The tail or base is described as Brahman. This indicates the superior excellence of the blissful Lord. Brahman is also called the foundation, Pratishtha. This indicates that the Lord is superior to all else, above the foundation. The Lord, who is Anandamaya, is the source of all the limbs, such as the head, which indicate the Lord's various excellences, such as Priya. Brahman is described as the limb, the tail, inferior, since it appears as the impersonal feature of the Lord. Being the support of Priya, Moda, and Pramoda, the Anandamaya person is the owner of the limbs or qualities. Thus, the section concerning the Anandamaya Purush indicates the Lord endowed with pure qualities like Priya. The Anamaya Purush is the opposite. Yeah. Anamaya Purusha is about, you know, getting what you can. So it's not about Priya. Priya, you know, means it's what's dear and everything like that. So there is nothing's dear except food. You know, our example of the samosas and the basket, all those people coming and taking them away. So it's not that they endear yourself, themselves to you because they're taking away your samosas. It should not be said that Priya and Pramoda belong to material bliss, such as the happiness on seeing a dear son. Since this description occurs in the section dealing with spiritual attainment after surpassing the previous Purushas and their natures. Right, so it's already described the four Purushas, right? And the Vijnanamaya Purusha is actually the position that the impersonalists are on. So you've already gone beyond that to Anandamaya. So then why you can't say that it's material. Otherwise, then what is then Anandamaya doesn't indicate crossing the material world. Is that, for instance, it is said, Tasya Yajur Eva Shiraha. The head is Yajurveda. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.3.
Taittiriya Upanishad is the most favorite Upanishad for Madhvacharya. Because of this, describes about Anandamaya Purusha and then easily could prove how he's above Brahma.
Yeah. Well, we also quote a lot and everything. Yeah. Well, I guess it was the same line, right? Yeah. So the Madhva is
he's the one who elaborately commented on Taittiriya.
On Taittiriya Upanishad. Yeah, because we'll use Isho and Taittiriya mostly is what we're quoting. And then, might others use other Upanishads or not so much? I mean, other lines, other sampradayas use other Upanishads? Okay, this much we know. Yeah, because you see is that they're constantly quoting Brahma Sutras and Taittiriya Upanishad. They're the main ones that are there. And then now and again you see Chandogya, Mundaka, Brihadaranyaka, you know, any from the 10. Okay.
It seems generally use Vishnu Purana.
Yeah, they'll use more there. Because we're comfortable to take things back to the Veda. Because for them, it's that they'll defeat these, but they defeat the Mayavadis. But it's also the cultivation within themselves, amongst themselves. So that aspect of the Sadhu Sangha. Well, it appears the Madhvas is still like trying to remove what wasn't, who weren't caught by Ramanujacharya. So who's left? You know, then you're going to deal with them. So there's much more of that kind of aspect. So that's the thing. In our line, there's much more Veda aspect than there is in the Sri line. Sri line is has more of the Pancharatric aspect. Oh, we use it very nice, but it's very prominent for us because Narad Muni. But we don't have a problem as much with the Veda. We'll use it just as much because, as we said, it's the puncher, the Vedic fits very nicely with Braj, right? Because if you use the Pancharatrik, then it has to be a Kayana, and but then as Bhagavan, it's already about the Lord, and then the supportive of that then is Vedic, right? But in so doing, you'll see is that because it's about the Lord, anything that's ritualized, it'll have that Pancharatrik aspect, but it'll be through the form of the Veda. Right, but so that sweetness maintains, and then the rituals have that. But otherwise, then in Vaikuntha, the Pancharatrik will take the more prominence and less on the Vedic. And so then, because of that, then you'll have that Ekayana will take on that aspect of Bhagavan, and the Pancharatrik, so it'll take on the aspect of form of majesty. Right. So we're always going to use these two. So for us, because it's Ekayana, that's the focus. So what Veda we use is what is Ekayana, it's about the Lord. So therefore, whatever we're using, we see it in that context. Right? And so for us, whether it's directly obvious or not, we have no problem seeing it. Because for us, the Krishna being everything, we don't have any problem connecting anything. While it appears others, like Ramanujacharya, those things that's more obvious, they use that because then it'll be more easily accepted. So it's just a different approach. It's all valid. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Since the Lord has spiritual qualities, the statement Yato Vacho Nivartante, words cannot describe him, serves to glorify him, not to remove anything. It's a glorification. Glorification means he is who he is, and then you add this in, and it just adds to it. It's just bringing out different ways to appreciate the Lord. While the impersonals will take it that there's nothing there. So it's not actually a glorification. It's just a description, a definition. So therefore the dryness. Right? Thus, in the Anandamaya Purusha, particular qualities are not listed as in the qualities of Vijnanamaya Purusha. The statements do not indicate the increase and decrease of bliss through words like Priya and Pramoda. The qualities are gathered together for worshipping the one Lord. Ananda Daya Pradanasya. Qualities like bliss in the Lord should be collected together for meditation. So he's saying qualities like bliss. So all these things, in that way you can meditate on the Lord. Brahma Sutra 3.3.12. Right. So that's going to be describing Abhideya. Right. This is in the third section. Qualities like joy of the head are rejected as variations in bliss. Priyashiras Tvadya Pratir Upachaya Pachayao Hi Bede or Bede. One should not collect qualities like head of joy to indicate increase and decrease in bliss, and thus internal difference in the Lord. Brahma Sutra 3.3.13. Priya, etc. would indicate increase and decrease. Upa, chaya, pa, chayao. In the Lord's bliss for a person worshipping the other forms in sequence, and would thus indicate internal difference, vede hi, in the Lord. Thus the statement anandadaya, pradhanasya, indicate that one should not worship the anandamaya form like the other forms. Right? So in other words, that you don't have that internal difference, that they're just different things. Right, that aren't connected. Here it's that one person has these different, but at the same time is one. Does that make sense? So Purvapaksha. This Shruti indicates that Anandamaya refers to the Jiva, does not refer to Parabrahman, since it is classed with Anamaya and others in the sequence. Right? Even though that they'll give the lowest level is the Jiva, then the next is Ishwara, and then you have Brahman. It's a sequence. And so then by that logic that they're giving here, then that means that the third one of Brahman can't be the highest because it's in a sequence with the other lower two. Right? And they just, you know, spent so much time trying to explain all that. So, Uttara, that is not so. Though it falls in the same list, because it is different from all the others, it is grouped with them, just as other stars are used to point of Arundhati star. Its superiority is not harmed by being grouped with other items like Anamaya, since they are explained only in order to show the nature of Brahman. Right? You're describing the others to show how Brahman is beyond this. But it doesn't mean it doesn't have qualities. It is said in the same text, Brahmavid apnoti param. One who knows Brahman attains the supreme. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.2. Anandamaya cannot mean anything else, since the learned attain Brahman according to these introductory words in this section. Some maintain that Brahman is the tail, basis for the Anamaya Jiva. Since the word comes after the description of the tail in similar previous grammatical constructions, such as that of the Vijnanamaya Purusha, if the sequence of limbs follows the meaning of previous statements, Brahman should be the tail of the Anandamaya Purush, who is then the Jiva. Yeah. So then if they're saying, no, the Anandamaya Purush is the Jiva, then Brahman is the tail of the Jiva, according to their definition. Because in all of these, one that said it's describing, even you're saying, okay, let's look at it. that Ananda Maya Purusha is the jiva, because you're putting it in that material line. So in all the other ones, it's giving the tail or the basis, right, or the lower portion, right? And so then you've come up to this level. It mentions Brahman as the lower level. So then that means then the jiva is the main point, because the subject then, if we're taking as that, is about the jiva, right? Because we're saying Ananda, that's the main subject. And so then Brahman just becomes part of that. You know, but now we're defined as the jiva. So in their own definition, now they've, you know. Yes. No? No?
So they just reverse the whole thing.
Yes, and they don't understand that's what they've done. Because then by doing that, the jiva becomes superior to Brahman. You know, or part of Brahman. And for them, they don't mind that, because they're trying to be God anyway. So even though it's an obvious flaw, but they may not notice it so much unless someone points it out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like if you're trying to win an argument, you may say something that the statement that the one person said, and you're countering that, it may counter their statement. So as long as you've done that, you think you've won the argument. But at the same time, your statement that you made to counter it may have also defeated your own philosophy. But in the moment, you're not looking at that. You're only looking at the statement that they've made. So it appears that they don't really stand back and look at the philosophy. So
it sounds like from position of controller and enjoyer, they want to go into supreme controller and supreme enjoyer.
Yes, exactly. So in other words, they couldn't do it by karma. They got frustrated, so now they're going to do it by gyan. Right? When that doesn't work, then they're going to try it by nothingness. And then when they get bored of that, then they'll be back. Yeah. So that's the thing. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakura in the opening of the, what is it? You have Tattva Sutra, Anaya Sutra, and?
Tattva Vivek.
Tattva Vivek. Then he makes the point that there's only two philosophies in the material, karma and jnana. And you can have various derivations of that, but that's all there is. You know, because it's you're doing one or the other. You're trying to enjoy or trying to get liberated. You know, if you can get enjoy why you're being liberated, or get liberated while you enjoy, then hey, great. You know, but so you can make any combination you want. But that's all they're doing. That's all the living entity does. However, it is said, tasyaisha eva shira sharira atma yaf purvasya tasmat va e tasmat. Tasmat va e tasmat. The antaryami of the previous body is the antaryami of this body. This means the Anandamaya Purush is the atma of all the previous bodies mentioned. This indicates the Lord. There is no fault in this, since the Lord is also described as the antaryami of the earth, which is his body. Or the phrase tasyaiva eva sharira atma can mean that since the Lord is anandamaya, so it's a major part of this anandavali is this anandamaya purush. No. You know, huh?
I didn't understand.
I'm just saying the Ananda, because the second chapter, that's the Ananda Bali of Taittiriya Upanishad. And so then it appears that a lot of this is just talking about the Anandamaya Purush. So once they just bring it up, and then they bring it to that, then they go on discussing. Or the phrase tasyaiva eva sharira atma can mean that since the Lord is anandamaya, his atma is his body. There is nothing except atma. Though body may be mentioned separately, it is like saying the body of the grinding stone is the grinding stone itself. Yeah, so then you're talking about the supreme atma, not about the jivatma. That. Because he's the one that goes from body to body. He's the one that makes it work. He's the one that makes it function. And you see that Atma is in everything else, while the Jiva is not. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you have to see is when these definitions are given, which ones apply to the jiva and which ones apply to the Lord. So as the proper definitions, we know it applies to the Lord, what applies to the jiva. So when one comes up about the jiva, and that, or, you know, it means talking about jiva, but it's talking in such a way as it appears to be a definition to the Lord. No, it's about the Lord. Not that, oh, now the jiva's become the Lord. You know, that's what they would like it to be. Right. For the Anandamaya Purush, the Anamaya and other bodies are rejected, though they exist for others. Later it is said, Netaro Nupapattehi. The jiva is not the subject of the mantra, because it is impossible by the context. Brahma Sutra 1116. Right, so that must be... Okay. Interesting. So, okay, so this is just commenting on the Upanishads, the Brahma Sutras. Thus, the Anandamaya Purush indicates only the Supreme Brahman, as indicated later by the masculine gender in Raso Vai Saha, and So Kamayata, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.6.1. The tail, or impersonal Brahman, is not the Anandamaya Purusha. This agrees with the statements, Tasmat Va E Tasmat Atmana. Superior to the body of knowledge is another body made of bliss, full of bliss. That is described in Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Is explained in Tasmat Va Etasmat Atmanaha. It is stated that the Lord is the soul within the jiva, repeatedly, and then that is this, and then that this Lord is full of bliss. Right, so the knowledge is there, but then the Ananda is even more. Right? Anyon tara atma ananda maya. This antayami is full of bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad 5.2. Atma in this case is understood to mean the Lord. Atma does not refer to the tail. The words purusha vidha. So then they'll try to make it that therefore the tail, the Brahman, that's the jiva. Then if they're mentioning Brahman, now how is it suddenly the jiva's Brahman? Right, yeah. The words Purusha Vidha that appear in describing the Anandamaya Purush should be understood to be present in the other forms like Anamaya. This Purusha is the final form with the other forms, Anamaya Purusha, etc., acting as his assistants. Bhagavatam says, Sad Asata Param Tvam Ata Yad Eshva Vashesham Ritam. Distinct from the gross and subtle material manifestations, Anamaya Purusha, etc., you are the reality underlying them all. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.17. Since the word Anandamaya is in the masculine, these words refer to the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Lord, right? Because the Shaktis would be, then be in the feminine, right? The Chatur Veda Shiksha makes this clear in its explanation. Thus it is proved that Anandamaya refers to Atma, and Atma means Parabrahman, the Lord. Vikara Shabdan Neti Chen Na Prachuryat. If one argues that the suffix Maya means transformation, that is not correct, since the suffix means inherent abundance. Brahma Sutra 1.1.13. This sutra explains that the affix maya does not mean transformation, but abundantly endowed. This means that a specific object has abundance of something, a quality, just as one may say that the sun has abundance of light compared to the moon. Thus one can say the sun is prakasha maya, full of light. Panini 5.4.21 says, Tat prakrita vachane mayat. The affix maya is added to a word in first case when the meaning is endowed with abundance. variety in the Lord is indicated as the various qualities seen in the deity form. So that could be also then the aspect of, like, you see in north, you know, like Jashoda Mayi, you know, that aspect of abundance, because she gives that shelter, nourishes, takes care of Krishna, like that. So it's not calling her Maya in the negative sense. It means that.
Also, the sun is called Jyotirmaya.
Jyotirmaya, yeah. Variety in the Lord is indicated as the various qualities seen in the deity form. Brahma Tejo Mayam Divyam. Brahman is filled with Tejo Mayam, shining light. Harivamsa. Atma Jnana Maya Shudha. Atma is filled with knowledge. Jnana Maya and is pure. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:47-31. So this Harivamsa is connected with Brahma is filled with Tejo Maya.
Yeah,
so the period should be on the other side. Okay. Ramanujacharya explains as follows. His abundance and power can never indicate some other being. The word Anandamaya negates any insufficiency in the Lord. So then here Anandamaya means that he is abundant in Ananda. So he's got more Ananda than anybody else. You know, and he's willing to share. The word Anandamaya negates any insufficiency in the Lord. Other qualities, present or absent, are understood by other proofs. It is understood that the Lord lacks certain characteristics according to authoritative statements. For instance, it is said, Apahata Pāpma. The Lord is devoid of sin. Chandogya Upanishad 8:15. The abundance of bliss in the Lord indicates the paucity of bliss in other beings. Because right? He is full of bliss means others are not so full in bliss. Maybe full, but not bliss. Right? It is said that Sa Eko Manusha Ananda. The Lord alone is blissful. Taittiriya Aranyaka 8. This indicates that the Lord's bliss is great compared to that of the jiva. The Lord is praised by describing him as Anandamaya. The Lord's abundance of bliss is indicated in the following. Raso Vaisaha Rasam Yevayam Labdvanandi Bhavati Ko Yevanyat Ka Pranyat Yaesha Akasha Anando Nasyat Esha Yevananda Yati. The Lord is rasa. Attaining this rasa, the jiva becomes blissful. The Lord were not blissful, how could any being exist? He gives bliss to all. Because all the living entities are looking for happiness. So unless he's blissful, why would anybody else be looking for happiness? Taittiriya Upanishad 2:7. Shaishanandasya Mimamsa Bhavati. This concludes the discussion of bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad 2:8. Anandam Brahmano Vidvan Na Bibeti Kutaschana. The person knowing the bliss of Brahman does not have fear from anything. Taittiriya Upanishad 2:9. Here, repetition of the quality of bliss of the Lord is seen. The words Ananda and Anandamaya should be taken to have the same meaning. The meaning is clearly repeated with Anando Brahmeti Vyajanat. He understood that Brahman is bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad 3:2. Oh, I get it. Because it's only saying Taittiriya Upanishad, it's not saying the Bali. Okay. Though blissful Brahman is one entity, there is difference with words like Priya and Pramoda, just as there's a difference in the sun in the morning and at noon. Right? So it doesn't change the nature of Brahman. It just is pointing out the different varieties within the nature that makes Brahman Brahman. Or why Brahmanya. To show there is no other object with such bliss, it is said, Yada yevaisha etasmin yudharam antaram kurute ata tasya bhayam bhavati. When the jiva deviates a little from Brahman, he becomes fearful. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7. When the jiva becomes fixed in this Lord who is invisible, without material body, indescribable and independent in order to become fearless, the jiva becomes fearless. The meaning here is that in separation from the Lord, the jiva becomes fearful, without bliss. So becoming fearful means you're without bliss. Why would scary movies, people would watch them to become... So they really want to just be without bliss?
Or? It's the secondary rasa, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Takes it down to the secondary rasa. Okay. The jiva is destroyed, faulty, and bewildered, and goes astray the moment he does not think of Krishna, Garuda Purana. So here it's saying, because they're saying, as soon as you're not absorbed in Brahman, the jiva is created by the impersonalist. But here Garuda Purana is saying, that's when the jiva becomes destroyed, faulty, and bewildered, when the moment he goes away. Right? The Lord who is full of Ananda is the Anandamaya Purusha. Or the word Anandamaya means the Atma of Priya, Pramoda, and Moda. To show difference from Priya, etc., it is designated as Atma, being most abundant, and is not different from the bliss. Just as Anandamaya, Jnana, Yajna, means the sacrifice which is completely filled with food, and thus is... Oh, Anamaya Yajna means the sacrifice which is completely filled with food, and thus is food itself. Anamaya Yajna. Yeah, relate to that one. Yeah, that's the Anamaya Yajna. Okay, Purva Paksha. The affix maya does not mean abundant, since it occurs within the series of words where maya indicates transformation, anamaya, etc. To think otherwise is false logic, like accepting half an old woman. Okay, definitely false logic here. Uttara. That is not correct. The meaning of abundant is correct because of the strength of repetition of the word Ananda as previously mentioned. Mentioning Brahmapucham spoils the interpretation of Maya meaning transformation, since nothing transforms into Brahman. This would mean Brahman is the tail, a transformation of bliss. Because then you're saying it's going to be transforming, so it has to have given up that nature. Alternatively, we say that maya in all cases does not mean transformation. Prana maya does not mean transformation of prana. It means abundance of prana. Because of the existence, forms like prana, apana, udana, samana, and dhyana. Pitivi pucham pratishta means that the deity of earth is the basis. But earth is as the basis does not transform into prana. Vayu transforms into prana. Ana maya also means abundant with anarasa, according to us. Others say that anarasa means transformation of food. This also represents transformation of other elements, such as water. But this interpretation cannot be accepted. Maya cannot mean transformation when the word to which it is attached has more than two syllables. Anarasa has four syllables. dvachash chandasi. In Vedic literature, the affix maya means transformation after a word with two syllables. Panini 43150. Okay, so that's just even on that level. That's it. Even if they don't catch the logic, at least that much they have to accept. Since Ananda refers to pure Brahman, maya cannot mean transformation in the word Ananda Maya, since Brahman never transforms. Thus, maya does not mean transformation. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Sarnitai Gaura Prabhupada. No, it's everything.
No stone unturned.
No, because that means because the Maya bodies, all they have nothing to do, so all they do is spend all day turning over stones. So, if someone has faith, you don't have to explain it this much. Because the point is these explanations are unlimited because the Ananta Sesha is always talking and explaining all these glories. But so we only need to use as much as is necessary. So for those who, you know, very easily appreciate and have that faith, you don't have to get into that detail. But for those who stubbornly argue against it, you have to use all these points. And this is how much we can appreciate and the Maya bodies are talking to. It's not that the Acharyas couldn't take it more than that, but it would just be over their heads. Like when Madhvacharya was giving translations to Vishnu Sahasranam. So he went through the whole thing and gave a translation of each. Then he went through it again and then again. And he did that, I think, like 40 times or something. And then when he went to go again, the next one, the disciple says, that's it, we can't accommodate anymore. That's the maximum we can. He was going to give 108 different meaning. And that's just because it's a nice number. Like that. So that's the thing, is that they can go more, but this is all that's necessary. So people say, oh no, it's so much gyan. No, this is how much is necessary. Like that. You know, and then if you want more, then go talk to Ananta Sesh. He'll give you more. Yes. Okay. And he could give you 1,000 different meanings at once. At the same time. Yeah. Yeah, yes. Exactly.